You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So the University of Auckland was investing its money into ETFs or funds which had fossil fuel investments in them. So they didn't have direct investments, but they were still contributing to climate change through their investments in those fossil fuel companies. And obviously with the gravity of the situation we have with the climate crisis, the obligations we have under the Paris Agreement and the IPCC reports that are coming out telling us how much time we have left, having investments in fossil fuels doesn't really make any sense considering they're one of the leading causes of climate change. Reality was that what the university was doing was not only ethically wrong, but from a financial point of view, the level of stranded assets in fossil fuels in the future, if we follow the Paris Agreement and if we follow the recommendations by the scientists, is huge. So the financial gain that's in fossil fuels isn't as big as it used to be. And in the future, it should be quite small, to be honest. So the university was being in part financially reckless and also just ethically acting in a way that wasn't in line with what we should be doing for a centre of future learning.
What was the announcement that was recently made?
On Friday the 30th of August, the University of Auckland Foundation came out and committed to an ethical investment policy focusing around corporate social responsibility. And within that, they agreed to reduce their exposure to fossil fuel investments, initially moving it down from 1.5% to 0.5% by December 2020, and then over time, a complete divestment from fossil fuels.
So what does this change mean for the university?
It shows that the University of Auckland acknowledges the ethical and financial and moral obligations that it has to stand on the right side of history and to remove its investments from fossil fuels. Basically, it just shows that it's taking the climate crisis seriously rather than saying one thing and saying that it's about sustainability, saying that it's all for reducing carbon emissions from its operations, but then having investments in fossil fuels, it sort of contradicts itself. So by removing that investment in fossil fuels, it finally sort of aligns all of its stance on the climate crisis.
You're here as a representative of Fossil Free UOA, the university group. What did you guys do as a group to help accomplish this outcome?
So it was a variety of actions. We had marches, we had sit-ins, we had petitions. It was a huge variety of activities that we did on campus with both students and staff to try and show the university the kind of support that there was for them to stand on the right side of history, to divest their money and to correct their stance on the climate crisis.
And you said there was one thing that sort of clinched it for you?
Yeah, so obviously all those events helped to build a momentum and to build a foundation for the campaign. But the reality is, I think that the one thing that finally clinched it for us was the report that we sent to council in December 2018, which asked the council to get the foundation to investigate the practicalities of divestment for the investment fund that the university holds. And this asked them to engage with their fund managers, Cambridge Associates. And through that process, they came back and reported to the foundation that there were new sustainable fund options that were going to work for the university. And from that, they were able to vote and agree to divestment. So it's definitely that report that set the final sort of downhill slide to divestment.
It got the ball rolling.
It finally got them listening to what we wanted to have them do. You know, we'd stamped our feet and we'd raised our placards and we'd said this is enough. But it was that one 15-page document or whatever it ended up being that really engaged them to do that final push. But again, that's not discrediting any of the work that we did prior to that. It was necessary to be able to show the kind of support that there was for divestment on campus.
And I think when you spoke to Lillian earlier this year, that was when you were just sort of undertaking that process with the council. I was wondering, how do you think other developments that have happened this year, such as the council declaring a climate emergency, how those sorts of things also added to this momentum?
Yeah, over the last 5 years of this campaign, there's been a huge social change and a huge change of culture throughout New Zealand and partly throughout the world towards environmentally conscious investment, environmentally conscious, just general behaviour. So when you've got the likes of the council declaring climate emergencies, when you've got the likes of IPCC reports coming out and saying we've got a very limited number of years to turn this thing around, the imperative to do something like divestment becomes a lot larger compared to, say, 5 years ago.
An ongoing theme throughout your five-year campaign, I think it was you never really got that interaction from the Vice-Chancellor. Did you ever get invited to the table on that? Even this announcement that was made recently, did they formally acknowledge you guys?
No, so we all found it quite interesting actually that it did happen under Stuart McCutcheon. We had kind of accepted that it's possibly going to have to wait for the new VC to step in. But yeah, so we didn't get any formal sort of mention or any invite from the foundation, but that's not something we'd expect. The foundation is a very private organisation. They don't, you know, have public events, and they don't have large media or anything like that. They're very focused on managing the money. It would have been good to have a bit more maybe on the council, but the reality is we had one goal, and that was to get the university to divest. But we're not in it for the glory. We don't need shout outs or anything. So long as they do what we've asked them to do and they made that commitment, then we're more than happy. And it's just very nice that it happened under Stuart McCutcheon, because he had been such a blockade to the whole process. So the fact that we got it done even when he was in power goes to show the strength that the campaign had at the end there.
Do you think it's also something to do with, was he coming to the end of his term?
Yeah, I think it was partly that. I know that when the council took a vote on that report that we produced, so getting them to vote to ask the University Foundation to investigate the practicalities of divestment, it was everyone but Stuart McCutcheon that voted for that to happen. So I don't think he has been supportive of it. I don't think that that's changed, but the reality is that the rest of the university has changed. So as much as he might be the leader at this point, the level of support against his position is too great for him to be able to negate, I suppose, like he has been able to in the past.
And that is something that really struck me as quite strange about your whole campaign, is that on the one hand, you were a registered group at the university. You received, I believe, Group of the Year one year, didn't you?
Did you receive
some acknowledgement from the uni in one aspect, but then on the other side, they were completely blocking
you?
Yeah,
it was a very strange situation. We received funding from the university to do some of our events. And then, yeah, we did get General Club of the Year in 2017. It's again that whole thing where, while we might be trying to get the university to do something, there are parts of university that can see the good that we're trying to do. And while we can be a little bit extreme at times, there's still that appreciation that what we're doing has a meaning for it. It's not just some crazy off-the-wall environmental movement. We're trying to get them to do a certain thing, and the university can appreciate that, I think.
And also recognising university as a place for protest and a place for expressing your political views.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole point of clubs on campus is to make sure that students can find a voice for things that they're passionate about. So it would have been strange to be ostracised or anything for trying to do a peaceful protest.
I guess another contradiction that I wanted to get your opinion on was the fact that I think Auckland University is currently ranked number one globally by the University Impact Rankings by Times Higher Education in terms of sustainability. And I wanted to know how, as a group, you felt about that, given that that was awarded prior to this recent announcement.
Yeah, when we saw that, we were a bit dumbstruck. We didn't really understand how the university got that. When we had a closer look into it, the university can apply to be measured on the goals that it wants to be measured on. So it didn't get measured on every single one of the sustainable development goals. It got measured on the ones that they applied for. And out of that, they got the award. So giving credit where credit's due, the university does do some good things in regards to getting the sustainable development goals integrated into how they operate. But obviously, fossil fuel divestment wasn't one of them at the time. We obviously did a small counter campaign when that first came out and said, seems a bit ridiculous when you're not divesting. But when you look at it from the grand picture, the reason they got it was because they're doing work in other areas. And now they have another piece of support for that award, I suppose.
I also wanted to get your comment on how this brings us into line with other New Zealand universities in terms of their policies on divestment.
Yeah, so with this announcement, you've got University of Auckland, Vic and Otago that have committed to divestment. I believe the University of Canterbury is a partial divestment policy. So yeah, the three main universities, the three biggest at least, have committed to divestment, which is a really good show of support in New Zealand for the movement away from fossil fuels and towards a more sustainable future. And it also lines up with the government's approach to climate change, the government's approach to fossil fuels. I think having the three biggest universities committed and working towards that divestment is a really good show of force on the international stage as well, to say that the country is largely together on this climate change movement.
I wanted to know lastly what was going to happen with the future of the group, seeing as you are fossil-free UOA, so are you going to be focusing on other institutions or?
Yeah, so I mean, fossil-free UOA had a mandate, it had a purpose and a goal, and now that we've achieved that goal, the group itself doesn't need to exist in its current form. We've all talked as an executive team, and we're not planning to keep the group together as it is. We're going to disband it at the next AGM and give ourselves a chance to go and get involved in other campaigns. There's obviously 350 Auckland, 350 Aotearoa, that's our parent organisation anyway, so we may get more of that onto campus, so bring a 350 group in on campus, but there's other aspects that we might go and integrate with.
And I know that your parent company 350, their current focus is really on getting banks to divest.
Well, it's a very important aspect of it, because banks obviously provide a huge amount of funding to the fossil fuel industry at this time. And particularly, we've now got the three major universities in New Zealand that are divested, but our five major banks have nothing in that regard. So it seems like a logical next step. I don't think it's something that needs to be led from campus, though. It's definitely a more city and national campaign.
Obviously, we're getting more awareness of climate change, which is great. But at the same time, a lot of the tone behind a lot of it is very personal, consumer focused. And I wondered if you could talk to, having been involved in a campaign like this, the importance of tackling those bigger institutions and making sure that they are making the responsible choices that you make in your own personal life.
Yeah, I think there's this myth, and it's been pushed by large companies and large polluters, that the solution to climate change and the solution to pollution and plastics is consumer choice. It's consumers and the way they choose to consume. And to a degree, they are right. Consumers need to make sure that they're careful with their consumption and how they dispose of stuff. But unless these companies that are major contributors to greenhouse gas emissions, to plastic production, all those kind of environmental issues that we're facing, unless they have some serious change at their level, then consumers don't have enough choice to be able to make good decisions. And if you don't have government structures in place to support correct waste management, if you don't have the kind of necessary infrastructure to support that, then the consumer decision that can barely go beyond, say, using a keep cup, you know. So running this campaign, it's about making those institutional changes. It's about making it more difficult for the status quo to remain and to open up the possibility of new investments and new work into alternative sources of, say, energy, alternative materials that we can construct and package out the stuff that we need to package. But yeah, you really need to make a systems level change to how we operate in society to make any of the personal decisions really have any impact in the long run.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.